Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, members, if we can come to order. For the members' information, staff is working on securing additional hearing time, whether it's extended hearing time, which we may utilize today, and we do have the committee room until, I think, 3 o'clock today, if need be. Also looking at other meeting times on other days and evenings, and I believe staff will be polling members as to what evenings work best for a majority of members. There just seems to be, on each day that we have bill introductions, a number of bills that are being introduced that are appropriate for this committee to hear. Representative Gunther, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I will keep my comments as short as I can, but I live 155 miles away and we're supposed to have 18 inches of snow.
Yeah.
I'd love to get stranded at home so you can come here by yourself.
Well, let's see if we can't wrap it up before the snow hits.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative House.
How many bedrooms do you have?
One of them has a bunk bed, Representative House. You and Representative Gunther. Okay. Representative Gunther has top. The top bunk comes with the pink ballerina sleeping bag. So, your choice, Representative Gunther. Representative Howes, we have House File 966. Good morning, Representative House. If you please move your bill to be before the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move House File 966, recommended to pass and be sent to the Committee on Commerce.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, just a brief opening statement. I have some ladies here with me today that will hold back on their testifying to help compensate the committee's time, but if needed, we will call upon them later. I also, Mr. Chairman, have an amendment that I would like to move to get the bill in the shape that the author would like.
Thank you, Representative Howes. The A1 amendment, which is in members' packets, I believe?
Yes, so, Mr. Chairman, I would move the A1 amendment.
Any discussion to the amendment? Hearing none. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative House.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill as amended, we start on the first page on line 10. You'll see where we've added 181.275 subdivision 2A. That is the nurse's mandatory overtime law, which was passed in 2002. What this does is put this under the Department of Labor. Then if you go to page 2, we've created subdivision 2A by deleting the underlying language on the bill and inserting the amended language. What subdivision 2A does basically is, well, it's self-explanatory. It just says that a nurse employed by the state of Minnesota, that this subdivision 2 applies to a nurse employed by the state of Minnesota, regardless of the type of facility in which the nurse is employed, and regardless of the facility's license, if the nurse is involved in resident or patient care. Then the other portion of the amendment deletes Section 4, so there's no point in discussing Section 4. So, Mr. Chairman, what this bill does in a nutshell is this. We passed this in 2002 because nurses felt, and I felt and others felt, that nurses were forced into too many overtime hours, and sometimes if they were tired or sick, they felt intimidated and couldn't refuse. What the law did was say a nurse could refuse mandatory overtime if she felt she was tired or sick and it was in the best interest of her and the patient. And you also need to know that a nurse is licensed and her license is at risk if she makes a mistake. Now, since the bill has been in effect, in my conversations with the Minnesota Hospital Association, they have told me that they have not had one problem with this bill since it was enacted. And I can tell you today, I've been given permission to tell you that the Minnesota Hospital Association supports this bill. The other reason we're doing it is the Department of Corrections 2 years ago told me that we don't have to honor the nurses' mandatory overtime. So in our discussions over the last 2 years, this bill came about, and we are making it very clear that if you're a nurse and employed by the state of Minnesota, the state of Minnesota also must follow our laws. And that is what this bill does. We could have went a route to bring this to civil court, criminal court, etc., but we felt putting it under the Department of Labor then would allow state agencies to deal with state agencies, and it would be much more uniform and simple. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for questions or let whoever wants to testify for or against the bill.
Representative Hayes, if you want to go to your testifiers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think in lieu of your time, if they don't need to say anything now, we'll hold that till the next committee.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Hayes. Representative Fritz.
Representative Dabney and Representative Hayes, I do have an oral amendment to the A1 amendment. To amend the A1 amendment on line 7, after the period, insert, this provision shall not supersede a valid collective bargaining agreement. That would...
Representative Fritz, could you read that again, please, for everyone's consideration?
After the period, insert, this provision shall not supersede a valid collective bargaining agreement.
Representative Fritz, do you want to speak to your amendment?
I have many nurses down in my district that are working at state institutions, and this would provide them protection so that they would grieve. If they were forced into working overtime.
Representative Hayes, do you wish to respond?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a wonderful amendment.
Do you wish to simply incorporate it?
I don't know if I can, we've adopted the amendment into the... Have we adopted my amendment?
We have adopted your amendment.
And I don't think I can incorporate it.
All right, then. Any further discussion to the Fritz Amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, one comment. I will tell you that State Operated Services has been following the nurses' mandatory overtime bill, and we don't have a problem with them at all.
Marvelous. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, put this down here. I have an amendment here that Paige can pass them off. And I want to help Mr. Representative Hollis. He's been, this is an amendment that he's been putting on recently, and I think he might get along with this. And it's an amendment that to allow that an employer shall not ban smoking in a non-public smoking area designated on or before the date of enactment of this section.
I don't have a problem with that, Mr.
Representative Nelson, do you wish to speak any further to your amendment?
Well, I just figured, Representative Howes has been trying to get this through, and I figured I could help him on his own bill. I don't know why he didn't include it on there, but...
Oversight.
Oversight, okay.
I've been mandated too many overtime hours by the Speaker.
Any further discussion to the Nelson amendment?
Chairman?
Representative Hayes.
I would like a member from the Minnesota Nurses Association to give her opinion on this amendment. So if Ms. Mary Jo George would come up and say whether or not the Minnesota nurses accept the amendment. It's a great amendment. I like it, but I represent the nurses today.
All right. Ms. George, welcome to the committee. If you'd please find a chair and introduce yourself for the tape.
I am reluctantly Mary Jo George from Minnesota
Thank
Nurses
you.
Association.
Welcome to the committee.
Of this amendment. Okay, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, will you explain what this does?
Basically, what this amendment does is that an employer has a place for employees to smoke out away from the that's not outside an interior space that they can't get taken away from them with the smoking ban that's coming down.
Well, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nelson. I don't believe we have a position on this. Our position is that we support a statewide smoking ban. So if you believe this is a worker right issue, I think we could go along with it.
Representative Nelson, would this supersede a statewide smoking ban, as I understand it?
I believe so.
Ms. George, the MNA supports the statewide smoking ban?
Absolutely.
Then, Mr. Chair?
If it's not contrary to that, and if it's just allowing workers to have a place to smoke outside of the facility, I suppose that would be okay. And I'm sitting here with the president, who's probably saying, we don't have a position on this at this point. So,
Representative Gunford.
Mr. Chairman, in order to try to help them out a little bit, this is non-public space, so we are not violating the smoking ban, in my way of thinking, because that smoking ban is for public places.
Representative Nelson.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Speaker.
Chairman, not Speaker.
Chairman.
She's very clear about that, so am I.
I want to pull the amendment.
Okay. Representative Nelson withdraws the amendment. It's rather enthusiastic for an organization that didn't have an opinion on the amendment. Representative Powers, to the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I think everything that I can say has been said.
All right.
For now. Stand for questions.
Any further discussion to the House File 966?
No.
Seeing none, in that case, Representative Powers renews his amendment that House File 966 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Congratulations. Thank you, Representative House, for bringing this bill forward. Representative Nelson, speaking of. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Nelson, if we may, Representative Mahoney needs to depart soon, and since you're a committee member, if we could give deference to non-committee members, I'd appreciate that. Representative Mahoney, if you would please come forward for House File 648.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and if I could, in deference to the person who carried this bill last year, if I could ask that Representative Gunther move my bill for me.
Representative Gunther, please.
Chairman, I move Representative Mahoney's bill, what used to be mine.
All right. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Yeah, if I have an amendment that's getting passed out right now, it's just a grammar and a couple of dates, and once that's passed out, I'd ask that the committee allow me to get the bill in the order that it needs to be in.
Certainly.
Representative
Gunther.
I'll move the A1 amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. As it's being passed out, the A1 amendment, when you read it, it reinserts a stricken comma, strikes a period, strikes a couple of words here, deletes a date because this bill is a year late from September 30th to puts in December 1st and changes a word, the word effect, to apparently the correct spelling. So rather minor changes just so that the reviser doesn't have to do it later.
All right. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. I have the bill in the order of the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is that this is a department bill for the unemployment compensation, and the department has spoken with everyone on the committee. It's kind of ironic that as a person who carries a lot of the building code and building inspection, I have a housing building inspection in about 40 minutes, so I've instructed Mr. Nelson to go over the highlights of the bill, and if you hear a big ouch, it's because he's going on too long. So with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Nelson. There's not much change. There's no change other than what we just did from last year.
Mr. Nelson, welcome again to the committee. Please introduce yourself to the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. This bill passed the Senate last year 62-0, passed all appropriate House committees, but for reasons unrelated to the bill got hung up on the House floor last year. I want to point out that the summary, which was prepared by Anita Newman, is absolutely excellent to fully explain the bill. The main portions of this bill are Article 1, Section 1, which provides an alternate base period which will allow new labor market entrants to collect unemployment benefits they would otherwise qualify now, but they simply would have to wait a few months. Now they would be immediately eligible. The other largest single portion of this bill is in Article 2, which would allow individuals who are working part-time not have their earnings offset quite as much as they are now. Currently, there is a disincentive to work part-time while collecting benefits because there's a dollar-for-dollar deduction. And what this bill would do is allow an individual who's working part-time to keep a little more of their earnings, thus giving them an incentive to work part-time. The business groups are in favor of that because it would make people more inclined to take part-time jobs. This bill does shorten the appeal time period. We found that applicants for benefits appeal right away, but employers have a tendency to wait until the last minute. Shortening the appeal time period will in fact save the trust fund over $750,000 a year in overpayments, we estimate. Minnesota already has a very long appeal period. Even shortening it to 20 days will still put us in some of the longest appeal periods in the nation. Wisconsin, in turn, has an appeal period of 14 days. So Minnesota, even at 20 days, will still have a relatively long appeal period. The bill does a lot of things, as you can see by the summary, but I wouldn't call any of those majors. I would call the points I've indicated the major portions of this bill which have an impact on individuals. And with that, I will take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Questions for Mr. Nelson or Representative Mahoney? Seeing none, Representative Gunther renews his motion that House File 648 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Congratulations. Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you, my building inspector. Thank you very much.
All right. Representative Nelson.
I got some handouts here.
All right. Staff will be coming to assist. Representative Nelson, if you'd like to move House File 554 to be before the committee.
I'd like to move, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 554 to pass, and where does that have to go next?
Committee on Commerce and Labor.
Committee on Commerce and Labor.
All right. Representative Nelson, to your resolution.
This is the resolution, and find my piece of paper here where I got my notes written down. Had them all ready to go last week and got my stuff since then. Anyway, Mr. Chair and members, I want to thank the committee for hearing this bill today. This is a resolution to Congress that we want them to support the employees' right to join, support employees' right to join unions and collectively bargain for better wages and working conditions, and that their rights to do so should not be interfered with. The workers that belong to unions generally have health care, pensions, and make better wages to support their families so they do not end up being a burden to the state or federal governments. This is a good thing. Collective bargaining and the unions are still one of the best ways to help people move from poverty into the middle class. And I have here with me today some people who will tell some stories of why this Free Choice Act is important, and I hope you can support the resolution today. And with that, I'm got Brad Leto here from the AFL-CIO.
Thank you. Mr. Leto, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself to the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Brad Leto, Legislative Director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, which is a federation of some 1,000 affiliated union state councils and central labor councils representing over 300,000 union members. And all of the affiliates of the AFL-CIO are highly in favor of the Employee Free Choice Act nationally, as well as this resolution. I'll be very brief, and we'll cut some of our other testimony too from the CWA folks in essence of time. Peter Hart actually did a poll in December of 2006, just a few months ago, which over half of America has no idea that employers at all resist workers' efforts to form unions. The Employee Free Choice Act will help more workers form unions, should they so choose, and bargain for better wages, benefits, and working conditions, without coercion from employers or from the union trying to organize them, as the poll actually showed a lot of people feel much more comfortable signing a card, which one of the provisions of the bill is, without coercion from either side. The Minnesota AFL-CIO believes the Free Choice Act will help lift the middle class and help working people get ahead. The Employee Free Choice Act does three things, and they're listed in the last three whereas clauses of House File 554. And the first is, if a majority of employees sign union authorization cards validated by the National Labor Relations Board, a company must recognize the union. Second, it would bring a neutral third party in to settle a contract with a company and a newly certified union if they can't agree on a contract after 3 months. And third, it strengthens penalties for companies that illegally intimidate employees. And in fact, currently, right now, if after 2 or 3 years the National Labor Relations Board issues an opinion, the workers that were wronged, actually, if they found another job, the only thing they get is the difference between the pay they would have gotten and the job they get now. This strengthens some of those penalties. The federal legislation in the House is H.R. 800. It's going to be introduced in the Senate shortly. It's being co-sponsored by 233 U.S. representatives, Democrats and Republicans. In Minnesota, U.S. Representatives Tim Walz, Betty McCollum, Keith Ellison, I believe you have a letter from Representative Ellison, Colin Peterson and James Oberstar are co-sponsors. Others are still considering signing on the legislation. I know that Representative Jim Ramstedt is considering it, and Senator Coleman has not indicated yet whether he will. Senator Klobuchar has publicly stated she has signed on as one of the initial co-sponsors. I won't take any more of the committee's time, but do want to introduce, and I think we'll leave it limited to one individual from the communication workers, Mr. Tim Donovan. Tim can explain how majority verification works for employers and workers, and also that just mention a situation that they also ran into with a different union with communication workers, of where they formed a union but could never get a contract. Thank you. I'll be here for questions at any time.
Thank you. Mr. Donovan, please introduce yourself to the tape and then proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Tim Donovan. My last name is spelled D-O-N-O-V-A-N. I'm currently an area vice president for the Communication Workers of America, Local 7200. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Employees Free Choice Act and in support of it. I wanted to testify to you that I had a positive experience with organizing of the singular call centers here in Minnesota and also the retail stores throughout the state. When we were doing the organizing, there was the card sign up, and what happens is when you do the card sign up, from the first day a card is signed, you have 60 days to turn the cards in, and at this time it's to the American Arbitration Association, which is in Atlanta, Georgia. So what happens from that time, you have 60 days to see, you know, to get 50% plus one card for those people to have a union, to be represented by the union. So what happened with Arn, at Singular, we were actually given access to the property And we took a tour, and they were going to have us sit in one area, and we asked the management there that if we could be in the cafeteria, which they did for us. So the people had access to us on their breaks, on their lunches. If they chose to sign a card, they did. It was, to me, it was a positive experience. If there was any negative about the unions, and you should know that the CEO for Singular actually supports having a union in the workforce. He actually spoke at our convention 3 or 4 years ago. He feels that it brings stability to his company. So he was for it. As far as the retail stores, we had the same thing where we had access to the stores, and the same thing. As far as the, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but as far as when we did the centers, it was 2 weeks into the process. We had 65% of the people signed up when we turned in the cards. And the reason why we go that far is just in case somebody doesn't sign their name properly or date the card, then American Arbitration will throw that card out. So with that, I'll just take any questions. Or
any questions for Mr. Donovan? Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Donovan, in all cases where you had this card check, was the employer agreed to have you go on the premises and do this?
Yes, they did.
Mr. Donovan. Other questions for Mr. Donovan? Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Nelson,
can you any other questions or?
I have also on the list Jerry Katz from SEIU. Ms. Katz?
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
My name is Jerry Katz, and I'm here on behalf of the Service Employees International Union, Local 113, a Change to Win affiliate. Local 113 unites 14,000 healthcare workers in Minnesota, and we're here today in support of House File 554 and the Employee Free Choice Act. And I have a couple of stories that illustrate why the Employee Free Choice Act is necessary. At the start of 2003, licensed practical nurses from a nursing home in Rochester started to organize with SEIU Local 113, and last December, the NLRB finally counted the ballots. All 11 of the ballots. So it took the federal government more than 3 years to count 11 ballots. In the meantime, the workers went through three different owners and a campaign of worker intimidation that was so severe that the NLRB sustained an unfair labor practice charge against the employer. The sole consequence to the employer, who no longer owned the nursing home anymore, the sole consequence for being found guilty was their former employees were given the right to hold a new election. So if the employer intimidation had been successful, the workers would have been looking at another 3 years to get their 11 votes counted again. So majority verification is an efficient process that allows the workers and employers to settle the recognition issue swiftly and with less conflict. Even after workers win a recognition vote, current law allows the government and employers to endlessly drag out negotiations and prevent workers from getting a first contract. In May 2003, over 100 professionals at Ceridian LifeWorks Call Center voted to join SEIU Local 113. And after bargaining started, Ceridian forced workers to use their personal vacation time to negotiate the contract, and the workers filed an unfair labor practice charge in January of 2004. And by September of 2005, the NLRB finally got around to deciding that that was illegal conduct. Since the majority of the negotiating team had quit or been fired by that time, the only penalty that Ceridian suffered was having to restore used vacation time to the handful of workers who remained. So by breaking the law, Ceridian was able to break the workers' spirits and prevent them from getting a contract. These delays are not minor matters. In 21st century global economy, where workers change jobs at lightning speed, union recognition process that moves at the speed of the early 20th century is effectively a non-process that denies workers the right to organize. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Katz. Any questions for Ms. Katz? Thank you very much. Representative Nelson, are there other testifiers you wish to bring forward? Mr. Ledger, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Reese Ledger. I'm the Strategic Campaigns Director of Teamsters Local 120, which has over 11,000 members and is the largest of its kind in the state. I'm also a Leadership Council member of Change to Win Minnesota, the new labor coalition representing more than 140,000 union members. I am here to express support for HF 554 and the Employee Free Choice Act because American workers shouldn't have to choose between forming unions or keeping their jobs. Under the National Labor Relations Act, organizing campaigns succeed despite the law, not because of it. As evidenced by its mounting number of anti-union decisions, the National Labor Relations Board has been co-opted by the very corporations it was intended to regulate. As a result, American workers like Mark Gustafson have paid a terrible price. Mark is here to provide you with an all-too-common example of why passage of this resolution is so critically important. Mark.
Mr. Gustafson, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Mark Gustafson. I'm from Champlin. I was a truck driver for a major Twin Cities food company for 30 years. And in that time, I was involved in 8 separate organizing attempts at my company. When our wages were reduced, our vacations taken away, and our pensions dissolved, we turned to the union. When we would talk union, our employer would attempt to intimidate us. They spent thousands of dollars on union-busting lawyers. They threatened us with closing the warehouse and eliminating our jobs. They cut our hours to bare minimum so we couldn't pay our bills. They put us on the worst routes in trucks that needed repair or simply weren't up to the job. They denied or deferred our annual wage increases. They had supervisors constantly follow and harass us on the road. They consistently challenged and delayed the workers' compensation of those hurt on the job. They forced us to attend anti-union meetings, so we had to listen to hours of union-busting propaganda. They routinely created a hostile work environment for those who supported the union. They created excuses to fire us, sometimes with tragic results. A friend of mine was involved in several early organizing campaigns with me. Management finally came up with a reason to fire him, and he never got over it, and a year later he took his life. With sacrifice, belief, and hard work, we won Teamster Local 120 representation. If the Employee Free Choice Act had been in place in my early years of work, I can guarantee you we'd have union representation 30 years ago. I am here today asking you, for all workers, people undergoing the indignities that I and my fellow workers endured, to vote in favor of the Employee Free Choice Act. Justice delayed is justice denied. Take this opportunity to protect the American workers and the American middle class. I struggled for 3 decades to become a Teamster. Please don't wait another day to pass this resolution. Thank you, Chairman and Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Gustafson. Excuse me. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you, sir. Representative Nelson, any other testifiers?
No.
All right. I have Mr. Phil Raines from Associated Building Contractors on the list. And here he comes. Very good. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself to the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Phil Raines. I'm from Associated Builders and Contractors. I'm also here representing the Coalition for a Democratic Workplace. We have several members, including the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Retailers Association, the National Federation of Independent Businesses, among many, many others. I have just a couple of simple points to be made here. This bill does not protect employers or employees. What this does is it takes away the right to a secret ballot. We don't allow that in Democratic elections for you guys. And abroad, as a matter of fact, George Miller, the chief author of this legislation in 2001, sent a letter to Mexico advocating that a secret ballot is vital for union organization. What's good abroad is good at home. This bill opens up people to abuses from both the employer and the employee by taking away that secret vote. Sorry, this is my first time doing this. I'm a little nervous.
Oh, take your time.
Also, I would also like to point out that in 1970, the Supreme Court reviewed the National Labor Relations Act and found that adding arbitration, compulsory arbitration, would violate the freedom to contract that's in the Constitution. They held that this was a vital point in upholding the National Labor Relations Act. By imposing mandatory arbitration, this bill would probably invite a constitutional challenge at the Supreme Court. And finally, the resolution that's here, in fact, has an error itself. It says that 25% of employers fire an employee. This is a gross overstatement based on a study that looked into allegations of it. It did not determine the validity of those allegations. National Labor Relations Board looked into that and found that it was 1% or less. So this resolution itself is flawed, and the legislation underlying it is flawed. And I would urge you to vote no, please.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Raines? Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Raines, we've known each other a long time, and don't be nervous.
I've sat on that side of the table before, but this is the first.
We're just regular folks, but your comment about it not being constitutional, that always bothers me because I look around the room and I don't recognize a constitutional law professor or attorney right now in the room, but with our government, our balance of power, our checks and balances, our separation of powers, I don't really believe it's up to this committee to determine if a bill is constitutional or not. If you believe that, you would vote no on the bill, I would assume, if you think there's a constitutional effect. But I don't believe it's unconstitutional. And even if I did, I would still vote for it. It is a resolution. It's not a law or a statute. And I would leave that for the attorneys that earn those high dollars and those professors that can make those determinations. And then with our separation of powers, the Supreme Court, if that's where it would wind up, they could determine whether it's constitutional or not. And you don't really have to answer that, Mr. Raines. It's just that I don't think it's time for us. And whenever someone at the witness table says this is unconstitutional, I always have to point out that we have a balance of power and checks and balances and separation. So that's all.
Right. Mr. Raines, you don't have to respond, but you can if you wish.
Discretion is often the better part. So,
how true. Rarely exercised around here, but true just the same. Any other questions for Mr. Raines?
Just a comment.
Certainly, Representative Nelson.
Bill was passed here, and under the NLRB secret ballot provisions, if we were running for office under that, currently we'd have to get 30% of the support from the public before we'd even have an election. And so what he's saying here is that it's not a secret thing. Right now it just basically puts up roadblocks. We never have elections, and that's what's happening now with the workplace. Employers get employees get together, they group together, they get the ballots, or they get their cards checked, or their cards signed, they get them turned in, and then the employers delay and delay and delay, and then intimidate them along the way. And that's part of what this is trying to get employees the ability to go and get to a ballot, get to a contract, and have good working relationships with their employers.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in order to keep this flowing smoothly, I will ask the author if he minds if I offer an amendment.
I believe I know what the amendment is, but you can offer it. We'll see if I'll accept it.
I won't, Mr.
Representative Powers withdraws his amendment before even offering it. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against this resolution? Seeing none. With that, Representative Nelson renews his motion to pass House File, thank you very much, House File 554, and be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. With that, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Hansen, House File 643. The chair moves House File 643 to be before the committee, recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. Representative Hansen, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. The page is handing out an author's amendment that I would ask someone to move to bring the bill to the form that I would prefer it to be in.
The chair moves the A6 amendment that's being currently distributed by staff.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, while that's happening, should I just start with a little background?
Certainly. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We have before you today the Packing House Workers Bill of Rights. This is legislation that I introduced 2 years ago, and I believe that Representative Mariani had introduced it 2 years before that. It is modeled closely on an executive order that was implemented in Nebraska by former Governor Johans in the year 2000. Governor Johans has since moved on to be the USDA Secretary of Agriculture. So we modeled the legislation based on that executive order, looking at trying to improve conditions in the meatpacking industry. I will talk a little later about what's happened in Nebraska since this went into effect. I just want to give you a little background on Minnesota. Minnesota has upwards of 320 meatpacking plants. Employment in these plants has risen from about 13,000 employees in 1990 to about 16,000 employees today. I represent South St. Paul, and South St. Paul has a long history in the meatpacking industry. I have with me Bernie Hess from United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 789, and he will be giving up some additional background. According to the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics, there were 12.6 injuries per 100 workers in the meatpacking industry nationwide in 2005. This compares with an average of 6.3 injuries per 100 workers in all other U.S. manufacturing plants. The federal OSHA suggests this number is estimated by as much as 69%. Our intent with this bill is to improve workplace safety. We are trying to make sure that folks who are working in meatpacking, it's a dangerous job, it's a difficult job, to make sure that they understand their rights and responsibilities and provide them with the tools that they need to reduce those injuries. If everybody has the author's amendment, I would go through that a little bit.
Representative Hansen, yes. If that is before the committee, if you could review for us, I'd appreciate that.
The author's amendment, first, when we look it defines employers, and it also removes some members or some industry from coverage under the bill. I mentioned that Minnesota has upwards of 320 meatpacking plants. My intent in this bill is not to be dealing with the small local locker plants where you may have a cow butchered, made into hamburger. So I checked with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, who inspects those plants for food processing, and there's about 200 plants that are 25 or under. And so this bill removes those small locker plants from coverage under this bill. Secondly, it defines meatpacking industry. we took this language directly from Nebraska. So it includes, it's a clear definition of the meatpacking industry. We also include some language about training. And one of the concerns we had heard with the bill is that it does, it's duplicative of other law. And what we're saying here is we're citing where these statutes do match other law. Yes, there is duplication in the law, but by putting this in one place as a packing house bill of rights, we can provide a training tool in addition to clear coverage, clear responsibility, clear statute in terms of those employers and the employees about the rights of the workers in that plant. So we're citing and referencing where else in statute these rights matter are found. We also define the ombudsman. The prior version of the bill only had the ombudsman appointed in consultation with the chair of the Senate committee, and I thought it was important that we'd have the House of Representatives committee also involved in that process, Mr. Chair. So we clarified that, and then the meatpacking industry involves a lot of people. A lot of people from different backgrounds. And so the earlier version of the bill had Spanish language as a preference, and we said languages, we've changed that to languages in addition to English. And then finally, that we have an open appropriation here. We do create an ombudsman position. So the appropriation language is added, and that will need to go to a finance committee depending on the budget. So with that, that's a description of the author's amendment to get it into the form that we'd like it to be in.
All right. With that, all those in favor of the A6 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair. Sorry. Mr. Chair.
What is it today? Don't answer that.
I will introduce Bernie Hess to talk a little bit on the background of the bill.
Mr. Hess, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bernie Hess. I'm with United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 789. We're based out of South St. Paul. We stand in support of House File 643, along with Local 6, Local 9, and Local 1161 of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. I'll keep my remarks short. This bill is truly about worker safety. It's about human dignity, and it's about food safety. Consumers have a right to safe food, and you'll be seeing a lot in the newspapers the next few months about some changes that might occur with the USDA, and we'll be watching that also. One thing that we're very concerned about is the whole idea of voluntary inspection in packing houses, and I would just urge you to follow the news and to be very concerned about how the USDA will approach this right now. But we think this is a good bill. All too often in this industry, it's the workers are the newly arrived who are not fully aware of their rights under various statutes, as you've heard. All too often, this group is opened up to exploitation, and we have some concerns about that. This is a good bill because not only would it educate workers about their rights, it would also reinforce food safety, we think, because people would be able to more fully understand the process. We also think that the consumer would benefit from this, which is a good thing. And we can do good. And we will do better than Nebraska. If Nebraska can pass this, I think this is something we can look at also and use it as a model and to bring this up so other states will catch on. And we're very, very encouraged by that. I think I'll limit my remarks there. And we've got bring up Rafael Espinoza from Local 789. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Hess. Mr. Espinoza, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rafael Espinoza, and my last name is misspelled in some of the literature. It's actually E-S-P-I-N-O-S-A, not a C.
Thank you.
I'm a union rep with the United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 789. I've been a rep for the last 6 years, and I've been involved in every single organizing campaign in the meatpacking industry for that time. What I'm here to tell you is, you know, some of the horrible things that are going on in the industry, and it is, like Bernie said, it is about human dignity. And something really interesting happened last week. In the last 6 years that I've been involved in the meatpacking industry and representing, you know, about four plants, I have never been called by OSHA. And supposedly I was told last week that they have to call us when they show up to a plant. Well, about a week ago they did show up to one of our plants and they called me and they said, you know, we're supposed to, you know, make an invitation. Would you like to, you know, tour the plant with us? And I was like, of course. I'll be there in 5 minutes. I went over there, we were having a conversation, and I was like, how come you guys never called me before? And he's like, well, you know, I don't know. You know, we're new, and this is, you know, what we're going to do from now on. I don't know if it's because of the bill, but, you know, in the past, whenever OSHA went through the plan, our members and our stewards would call me and say, hey, OSHA was here. And they would call me by midday, in a couple hours, and they were gone. This time, they spent 3 days in the plant. Couple days I went with them and we were having conversations about what's going on, you know, with safety. And I point out a bunch of stuff that our members told us. I said, you know, ask anybody in the line to take off their gloves so they can show you their hands. One of the things that happens when people are working really fast, because you're talking about, you know, killing about 150, 175 cows per hour. So the work has to be done by seconds. A lot of people get bumps in their hands. I mean, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, but I just noticed that a lot of people have them. And I asked them to request that from the workers. They never did. And I said, if you're going to talk to the workers, pick them up randomly. Don't ask the company to provide you a worker. And they said they were going to do that. But when we were down in the line, they asked the company to provide a worker so they can talk to them. Now, about 99% of the people that work on the floor, and the plants that we represent are from Mexico, Latin America. The person that the company provided was a local person. And he's a good worker, but he didn't want to say anything bad about the company. The first thing that OSHA said was, you know, the company cannot fire you, the company cannot do anything against you for testifying. Well, right away, our member took a couple steps back, and he's like, you know, I don't want to get in trouble. So, because of the intimidation that's going on in there, and nobody wants to talk about it, he said that everything was fine and dandy. But once again, the conversations that I was having with OSHA, they didn't translate into what happened in the floor. I noticed that what OSHA was mainly focused on is it was the electrical outlets and things like that. When we were talking about safety of the workers and the injuries, they say, oh no, you know what, that's really more of a work comp issue than really what we're talking about here. Like, well, safety is safety. But anyway, I don't know if they call me because of what we're doing here, but it, to me, it was very suspicious that I have never been called, and now all of a sudden, you know, they're doing days of going through plants. But another thing that is that was very disturbing to me to see is that at a plant at Buffalo Lake, Minnesota, when we had an organizing drive going on, the people that worked there, they were complaining about the bathrooms, about bathroom breaks in general. But what it turns out that the company was doing is that they put a chain and lock in the bathrooms because they didn't want people to abuse them. That's what the company was saying. We were claiming that it was illegal, and, you know, going through the laws, but there's nothing in the laws that says that it's illegal for the company to do that. But we called OSHA, and OSHA hadn't been in that place for a long, long time. And what happened to the company was just, you know, slapping the wrist and, you know, don't do that again. And people were very disappointed that nothing really bad happened to the company. And the things that are going on in the meatpacking industry is just wrong. And we need something with teeth and something that would actually make the companies think twice about taking advantage of people like that. We were here last week, and some of the people that were testifying for the communications, for people to have a right to communicate in the workplace with their union, we were talking about local people and that they know the rights. Now imagine somebody who's newly arrived to the country, doesn't know the language, doesn't know the rights, you know, doesn't really know really how the system works. You know, they're just open to abuses, and some of the abuses that are going on are just horrible. We have a lot of problems in places that are unionized, and we're there to support the workers, and we do whatever we can, and we always find it all the time. And in places where there's no union, there's only two choices. They either be quiet or they got to go someplace else to find a job. I don't know if I want to go through more stuff, but you know, because I know the weather is going to get better later on. But anybody has questions?
Any questions for Mr. Espinoza? Excuse me. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen, other testifiers?
Yes. our best friend, Stephanie. We have a few more testifiers.
All right. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for your consideration of this important matter at today's hearing. My name is Stephanie Bates, and I'm here to represent the Midwest Coalition for Human Rights. We are a network representing more than 40 organizations from 9 states, working together to promote and protect human rights in our Midwest region, the United States, and internationally. Currently, the coalition has 3 primary issues, one of which is meatpacking workers' rights. The coalition's interest in workers' rights was generated by the groundbreaking work done by one of our member organizations, Nebraska Appleseed Center for Law and the Public Interest. Nebraska is currently the only state that has a meatpacking workers' bill of rights. This legislation was passed after the Lincoln Journal Star published a series of articles in 1999 depicting the harsh conditions in the packing plants of Nebraska's renowned beef industry. The articles highlighted the high rate of injury and harsh conditions that the largely immigrant workforce faced on a daily basis. The articles also highlighted the indignities faced by workers in this industry, such as the refusal to allow workers to go to the bathroom during their shifts, thus forcing them to wear adult diapers while handling meat intended for public consumption. Former Republican Governor Mike Johanns, who is now the Secretary of Agriculture, responded to the Lincoln Journal Star articles by asking his lieutenant governor to investigate the packing plants and make policy recommendations. After this investigation, Governor Johanns went to the plants to see the conditions for himself. After seeing the conditions, he sat in the back of his car and outlined the basic rights he thought every meat packing worker deserved, the same rights that are reflected in the bill being considered here by this committee. Meatpacking is one of the most dangerous jobs in the United States. It has an injury rate double that of any other industry. According to Human Rights Watch, inherent dangers in meatpacking work are dramatically exacerbated by ever-increasing line speeds, inadequate training, close quarters cutting, and long hours with few breaks. Workers must deal with loud noises, sharp tools, dangerous machinery, and a slaughter line that moves at an incredible pace. Additionally, this work is extremely physical, repetitive, and involves working in either very hot or very cold temperatures. Workers suffer from repetitive motion injuries such as carpal tunnel and tendonitis, as well as strains and sprains. Workers also suffer injuries from sharp knives, cutters, and trimmers they use to perform their job. Common injuries include cuts, burns, lacerations, and in some cases, amputations. Minnesota has upwards of 320 meatpacking plants and a workforce of over 16,000. Of these 16,000 workers, the majority are immigrants. Due to the fear of retaliation and a number of language barriers, these workers are usually afraid to complain or report injuries. I would like to commend the committee for bringing this important legislation to light at this time. This legislation provides 4 basic guarantees: protection of workers' health and safety, access to workers' compensation, access to complete information, and the right to organize. We at the Midwest Coalition for Human Rights believe these 4 guarantees are crucial to support the most basic human rights of workers. This legislation also creates an ombudsman position that is fundamentally necessary to enforce the rights set forth in this bill. One of the lessons Nebraska has learned from its legislation is that because of the nature of the workforce and the conditions of the meatpacking industry, these rights will not be protected without an ombudsman to enforce workers' rights. Besides protecting the rights of workers, the proposed bill also serves to clarify the responsibilities of employers so that they can conduct their business in a productive manner. This bill provides a clear list of responsibilities so that employers understand their duties to their employees. When Governor Johans set forth the Bill of Rights in Nebraska, he received a positive response from many employers. The chief executive officer of IBP Fresh Meat said, "This Bill of Rights reinforces the practices that IBP has long supported at our plants here in Nebraska and elsewhere. Proper treatment of workers is not only the right thing to do, it is also good business because workers represent the company's most valuable resource. Minnesota's proposed bill of packing house workers' rights makes clear for employers the minimum duties they have to their employees while operating in the state of Minnesota. And we know that many employers already set much higher standards for their workplaces and their employees' safety than is even required here. Mr. Chair and committee members, it is the workers in the state of Minnesota who stand to benefit the most from this legislation. Nebraska Appleseed found that 5 years after the passage of Nebraska's Bill of Rights, it has served a role in helping workers to understand the rights entitled to them. Minnesota's workers are entitled to a safe workplace, free of discrimination, the right to complete information, access to information in their native language, the right to adequate facilities, the right to organize, and the right to an ombudsman who has the ability to inspect and review the practices and procedures of meatpacking operations in the state. Minnesota's Packing House Workers Bill brings together many of the key rights into one comprehensive and understandable bill that will provide a level playing field for workers in this dangerous industry. Thank you for allowing me the time to express the Midwest Coalition's view on this very important piece of legislation. The bill is a service to workers and to employers alike in their common objective of creating a safe and productive workplace.
Thank you, Ms. Bates. Representative Fritz.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony, and I just want to thank Representative Hansen and for bringing this bill forward. I'm sitting here knowing full well quite a bit about the industry. I have a turkey plant in my district, in my hometown of Faribault, Minnesota, and I know about the diapers and the cuts and the what does that do to the dignity of the workers that we want to stay in this country and be legal and have a good job and have a good taste of what the American dream is when we hand them a diaper to go to work and stand all day. So I am so very, very grateful for you for bringing this forward, and so are the workers in my district.
Thank you. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Bates, is there anything that is in this bill other than the ombudsman that isn't already in law in Minnesota?
Ms. Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Most of the things enshrined in this bill are already in law in Minnesota, but as Raphael said before, if you're new to this country and you don't understand how our system works, it's very difficult to understand the rights that you have entitled to you. I have here a list of laws that are entitled to workers in Minnesota, and as you can see, it's a very long list. And if you don't understand how the system works, how are you supposed to understand that you have these rights? So what this bill does is brings them together in one place in a comprehensive form where someone new to this country can understand the rights that they have.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the answer was yes, except for the
yes.
I really look at Raphael's testimony was kind of enlightening. I didn't know about the adult diapers. But I have no reason to doubt what was said. But when I look at this bill, it's not really expanding a lot. It's my understanding that there are some meatpacking industries that are trying to communicate through universal symbols so the workers know what's going on and they know where the safety things are and they know what workplace English, so to speak, at the minimum is there. And look at the fact that work comp claims in most meatpacking plants are going down, and it's going down for a very, very logical reason. Work comp is determined by severity and repetition of injuries. It's caused by a lot of things. The number of instances determines your mod rate, and your mod rate is 1.7. That means you pay 170% of what is normal for that industry. And it's certainly behooves the industry, meatpacking industry, to make sure they have a safe workplace. It would be, in my opinion, absolutely stupid to have a workplace that wasn't safe and didn't have their goal is to reduce injuries. They wouldn't be in business long. So I have not a great deal of problem with the bill, but I just don't know why we're having it. And I think if OSHA is not doing their job, as Raphael pointed out, we should go look at Minnesota OSHA and make them better. I have no problem with that. If there are human rights violations being done, I think we should go to you and make them better. But I don't know why we really have to have this law, although I personally don't have a lot against it, but it's my opinion.
Representative Gunther, staff has pointed out one additional change that's in the legislation. Minnesota Statute 273.253, requires that there be restroom breaks, but it doesn't require that there be restroom facilities. Lines 1.11 to 1.15 of the bill require that facilities be made available as well. Representative Gunther.
I think if that's not present law, it should be current present.
Representative Hanson.
Chair, just to follow up, and I know that you've got somewhat limited time for the committee, but I did pass out, and I referenced earlier Nebraska, and the members have in their packet the 2005 annual report on implementation in Nebraska, prepared by Jose Santos, and it's dated December 1st, 2005. I don't have the most recent one. But I think, and members could contact Mr. Santos, he's very willing to talk to people. If you look on page 4 of that, in the last paragraph, it talks about the Bill of Rights plus a voluntary partnership program that, as part of that, members have received a 23% reduction in injuries and illnesses resulting in days away from work, and also a 39% reduction in total recordable injury. I think those are good results from the effort. And then the next page, page 5, you will see what the coordinator, in Nebraska they called it the coordinator. We went ombudsman. We should find a new name for ombudsman.
I agree. That would help me.
But it talks about what that person did. The training, the contacts, and the inspections that that person did. So, again, I would refer folks to that, and I believe it's available for folks in the audience here as well if they would like to look at that. I think that answers some of the concerns of Representative Gunther.
Representative Gunther.
Certainly, I appreciate that very much, and I really believe that's the case. I know the national average in reducing injuries in meatpacking plants is very much the same. I'd like to ask one question to Mr. Hess. What's the difference between that word I have a hard time describing and union steward?
Mr. Hess, I think it's ombudsman is the word in question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, I didn't hear the question, sir.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Mr.
Representative
Hess,
Gunther.
What's the difference between ombudsman?
Yeah, something like that.
And the union steward in a plant?
Mr. Hess.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, a steward is a member of the union who is a worker in the plant. An ombudsman would be an independent person working for the state that would go in and help with educating workers, making sure a number of the safety issues were addressed.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In times like these, when finding good workers to work in your factories, plants, meatpacking plants, whatever they are, that's not an easy thing to do to get a good workforce. I think whatever Union Stewart says is wrong. I think the plant manager or owner of that plant should pay very much attention to, and in my opinion, should function very much the same. If you find an error that you would like corrected, either you're going to take care of it with a talk with the plant manager, or you're going to take care of it in union negotiations. Either way, I think you function somewhat similarly.
Mr. Hess.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, I We always look upon our stewards in the facilities as resources, as somebody that's the bridge between the workers and management to work out issues. But with this bill, it also addresses non-union facilities that either don't have a union or are in the process of organizing. So this would allow for an independent voice to or a resource to help resolve some of those issues.
Representative Gunter.
Yeah, thank you. You know, Mr. Hess, I was a member of the Amalgamated Meatpacker and Butcher Workers Union. And the primary function of that union steward, when I first joined that grocery store's staff, was to show me what the ropes were and tell me what rights I had and what obligations I had. And I think that was a very good indoctrination to that grocery store, Chopper City. So I think, in my opinion, they should function somewhat the same. Have somebody hired by the state, other than hiring another good worker, I have no problem.
Representative Hornstein, Representative Benson, and then Representative Nelson. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Hanson, thank you for this legislation, and I really appreciate the work that the UFCW has done. I was just going to, you had made the point that I was interested in making, which was that we have results in Nebraska that are very, very specific and concrete and have made a huge difference in the lives of the workers. So, you know, thank you for elucidating that, and I think that's why this is needed, and we ought to be supporting it. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hanson, referring to the comments by Representative Gunther, we're in a situation in the United States now similar to the beginning of the previous century, that is, the beginning of the 20th century, when you had large numbers of immigrants, whether legal or undocumented. And during that time, one of the common phrases, meatpacking plant, when someone was injured was, if you don't like it here, and if you've been injured, we can just get another horse. And I think that is partly an explanation for this exploitation. And I just wanted to mention, when I went to college 2 summers, I spent at meatpacking plant in order to earn some tuition. And my job was down in the hide cellar, and I worked down there 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. I think it was $2 an hour, so you can tell it's been a while. But I remember after those summers, leaving the plant for the last day and saying goodbye to a lot of the young guys who were still there and were, you know, not going on to college or whatever, and feeling kind of guilty. And I just like to say that I feel really bad that after all those years since I've been in that meatpacking plant, we're still facing the same situation. It's inexcusable.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, have, you know, when Representative Gunther was talking about stewards, in the ideal world, a steward should operate like that. But this bill all covers non-union companies as well as union companies. And the number of enlightened employers that would take what the steward has to say to them are few and far between at times. In the construction industry where I come out of, sometimes you put a steward on a job and you put a big red target on their back, and anything they have to say there, they find ways to get rid of them. And so, I mean, I think this is a good provision, ombudsman. And I think that's a good idea, that way there's somebody outside that they can go to without, that's not going to be intimidated by the employer or by the union. So, I mean, I think this is a good thing.
Representative Hanson.
Chair, you know, I would take a friendly amendment to change ombudsman to coordinator.
Where's our thesaurus when we need one?
I do have a testifier who could not make it. I don't believe she has come, but there's a testimony in your packet from Joanne Pasternak with Jewish Community Action and Beth Jacob Congregation, and I think it's short and sweet to the point, and you can read that, and it's available for folks as well.
Thank you, Representative Hanson. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and if I may address the hearing in general, but the issue of meatpacking workers in diapers, I think, is appalling in terms of not only personal hygiene, but workplace sanitation. And I think as a former union member, just like Mr. Representative Gunther, Amalgamated Meat Cutters and Butcher Workmen, I also worked in a grocery store, so I didn't handle much meat. But also as a beef producer, I think we owe it to our consumers to deliver a high-quality product. Generally, that beef, when it leaves the farm, is in excellent condition, sanitary, and ready for processing and delivery to the consumer. I believe if a meat packer worker is required to perform his duties wearing a diaper because he isn't getting a bathroom break or bathroom facilities, that is unfortunate. And I think that's a remedy that should be put into play.
Thank you, Representative Szymanski. Mr. Dietrichs. I'll remind you, Representative Benson is grading you again today, so.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dietrichs passed with honors, if I remember, so I will not be grading you.
All right. You're off the hook today, Mr. Dietrichs. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and if I accidentally say Mr. Benson, it's a force of habit more than anything else. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill today. My name is Dave Dietrichs, and I work for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber opposes this bill for several reasons. First, we believe several provisions are already covered by both federal and state law. And second, we believe there are several ambiguities that could lead to discretionary interpretation, which may become problematic. Before I delve into some of the specific issues that relate to those two points I just made, I would like to talk specifically about some of the language and address some issues that the committee seemed concerned with earlier on in testimony. And that goes back to Representative Hansen's comment about certainly there's some duplication in the law in this bill. And I think that is particularly problematic because this bill contains a remedies section. Now, certainly this bill would apply to both unions and non-union facilities alike, but if there's a collective bargaining agreement, there would be a remedy already established through the grievance procedure. Moreover, because there is a duplication of law, both federal and state, there's oftentimes going to be remedies outlined in those statutes as well. So, theoretically, there could be multiple remedies prescribed, and it would be difficult to determine which one would take precedence or be more important in finding an appropriate remedy. So specifically to the language of the bill and some of the issues that the chamber has opposing this bill, in Section 1, what constitutes meatpacking? And I know there was an amendment that said it included meat and poultry, but as we talked to some of our members, we found out that there could be an ambiguity in this area. Specifically, if you look at the American Heritage Dictionary, it defines meatpacking as the business or activity of slaughtering animals and preparing the meat for sale. And I think that's certainly what this bill would be applied to. However, under that definition, would a non-slaughter meat processor be covered? What about a canning operator using meat as an ingredient? What about retail meat departments in grocery stores, or livestock farmers, or even meat lockers? Under Subdivision 2, the right to adequate facilities, throughout the bill, the word adequate is used to describe mandatory levels of compliance, but nowhere in the document is the term ever defined. So, for example, would the ombudsman outlined in Section 2 have the authority to determine their own personal standards when determining what is adequate? And what would these standards be based upon, and how would that affect precedent for future inspections? Subdivision 2.1, in terms of adequate facilities, Mr. Chair, you and counsel mentioned that this was not outlined in Minnesota statutes. That's correct. It's actually found in the Minnesota Building Code, Chapter 1305, which mandates the number of restroom facilities per employees in each facility. And if that wasn't enough, OSHA Regulation 1910 also mandates the number of restroom facilities per employee. And it also provides a chart for easy reference for employers to determine the number of restroom facilities that are needed. The USDA also regulates and enforces the requirement for adequate restroom facilities and their operation through on-site inspection and compliance verifications. In addition, many cities, counties, towns, and municipalities have additional codes that go beyond any of these requirements. In Subdivision 2.2 and 2.3, adequate room for meal and rest breaks, our members are concerned that these requirements lack definition. These subjects are not currently regulated by any government agency, and when this bill provides no definition and it's not currently being regulated by anyone,
would that mean the ombudsman would be free to apply any standard they wanted? And would there be any requirement that ombudsman be consistent in applying those standards when inspecting different facilities? As far as time for adequate time for restroom breaks, that's already regulated by Minnesota Statute 177. The statute, however, provides an exception for collective bargaining agreements, and this bill doesn't. Does that mean the ombudsman could find the requirements pursuant to a collective bargaining agreement to be non-compliant with this law? There would be a conflict between two separate Minnesota laws in this arena and potentially a third with a collective bargaining agreement if there was a union involved. Additionally, OSHA also enforces this regulation under Section 1910. In terms of right to adequate equipment, again, this requirement lacks definition. For example, what constitutes equipment? Does this requirement apply to every piece of equipment in a facility, or does the requirement apply only to personal equipment issued to an employee? Under Subdivision 4A1, Description of Salary and Benefits, the Department of Labor promulgates and enforces these regulations regarding the requisite language that an employer must use to communicate benefits plans. Under 4A5, Description of Occupational Hazards, this is prescribed under both federal OSHA and Minnesota OSHA, and they have many standards that address hazard assessment and communication with the employees in case of a hazard. In addition, the OSHA General Duty Clause also applies to any hazard not specifically referenced by a specific standard already mentioned. It states that each employer shall furnish to each of his employees employment and a place of employment which are free from recognized hazards that are causing or are likely to cause death or serious physical harm to the employees. In Subdivision 4B, Description of Employee Benefits, both state and federal laws already require employees to post the following list of employee rights: the right to organize and bargain collectively. The already applied to those lists. But however, the right to organize and bargain collectively is not one of those laws that requires communication. This legislation would add that requirement. But if this law is to be enacted and communication is therefore supposed to occur, what about the right not to organize? That is not included in this bill. And finally, Mr. Chair and members, the last section regarding the ombudsman is not necessary. Under Minnesota Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1973, Minnesota OSHA is authorized to conduct workplace inspections to determine whether employers are complying with standards in providing a safe and healthy workplace. Workplace inspections in Minnesota are performed by occupational safety and health investigators who are knowledgeable and experienced in the occupational safety and health field. In conclusion, we feel that this bill does not protect anything that's not already covered by state or federal law, and the potential issues created by making this bill of law, including the aforementioned ambiguities, could become burdensome to employers, employees, and potentially an already taxed court system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Diedrichs. Any questions for the testifier? Representative Lane.
Some of this information that we've gotten today has been somewhat common knowledge, some awareness of the problems going on. So if my concern is this, you say all these things exist to already serve to satisfy the fixing of the needs, and yet we have this problem. So we need to address it. And yet you're saying that you're working with the employer. My concern is if this was somewhat common knowledge, why haven't you been working with the employer to remedy it? Because in telling them about the statutes and such that they are violating, why hasn't there been that going on that end? Because without that, we need to really need to fix this problem.
Mr. Diedrichs.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I think that if you look beyond just Nebraska, where this issue originated, you can see that across almost all the states, because of the increased information you were talking about, you can see that occupation and safety health standards are increasing across the board in the meatpacking industry. So I would actually contend that it is getting better, to answer your question.
Representative Lane?
Well, I disagree, and I think we need to fix it.
Any other questions for Mr. Diedrichs? Anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against this bill?
I think there is one more. Well,
we've got their coming forward. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, members, I think many of the concerns just expressed are were handled in the author's amendment because it does cite page and line where those other statutes are to reduce any ambiguity and provide clarity. But I just want to add that in fiscal year 2005, there were 49 Minnesota workplace safety and health inspectors for the entire state. At current staffing and inspection levels, it would take Minnesota OSHA 59 years to inspect each workplace under its jurisdiction just once.
Thanks, Mr. Hanson. Sir, welcome to the committee. Please give us your name and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Abdi Omar, and I come from Faribault, Minnesota. And I've been living there for a while, and I used to have a store and restaurant there. And all what I'm talking about is the safety of the one of the meatpacking companies in Faribault, and that is the Turkey store. I never worked actually there, but I used to have that business in the town, and workers of the company, 70% of the workers of the company is my community. And once they finish their job, they come to my store and the restaurant, and they eat the food, and you know, they make shopping down there, and you know, they explain to me every day what is going on down there. And what I'm, you know, testifying today here, it is the safety of the turkey store, because I meet so many people working down there, and you know, they lose almost their hands. You know, they don't. They got a lot of injuries, and you know, and a lot of problem of the safety issues. After a while, you know, the USCW and Local 789, they come down there, and I try to help them, you know, and explain to them, you know, those people, they don't know, they are most of the newcomers and, you know, new immigrants, and they know nothing about the rights of the workers of the nation. And then I go to the house and I try to visit them and ask them, you know, to come with the union or something to get their rights on. And you know, I meet with them, dozens and dozens of them who get injured for their hands. And you know, even I try to them, you know, I try to explain them as much as I know the what's the right of the workers in America. And after they don't trust me, I call the lawyer, and I meet them a meeting, big meeting in the town, and the lawyer was explained to them what's their rights in the workplaces. And when she explained, one of them asked her, is that the rights of America, of everybody has in America? And she said yes. And the asked man said, then why the Turkey store, they doesn't know the what's legal, or you know, and what's the rights of the workers in America? Why they do this? And why the government doesn't know what is going on here? And she said, there's never one, you know, complaint the Turkey store come the front of the government. And I think I'm very happy today to tell the message of the workers in Turkey store in the front of the government. And this is the one of the workers, and she will explain exactly what is going on down there.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Omeron. Ma'am, if you would please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
My name is Faro Haji. I've been living in Minnesota almost 8 years, and I've been working January 53rd, 7 years and a couple months. I start working line because if I touch both the line, it fits. We're running second for every minute is 45 bucks. And the people working there, if they need the bathroom or something like that, they don't give a right, the right time. Break time, they never punch in and out. when they started work, they never find start time. They, one of them just, I tried to find one day to figure out what's going on. Then my supervisor come and he say, why did you do that? You don't have to, we find you in, you just find you out. That's the only thing you care. Don't break time, anything. If I talk about the break time is not 30 minutes. It's less than 30 minutes. And from the where we're working to the cafeteria, the mail room, it's distance. So almost 10 minutes or 7 minutes is over when you go from the factory to the cafeteria. Then, if you just, before you finish your meal, the people already go back. And I think that's pretty sad. Also, the people, they don't drink enough water because they're in a bathroom and no one give them permission to go to their bathroom. Also, injuries. If you get injuries, they don't send you to the doctor. We have a nurse over there, and the nurse, she can take care to put the bandage, but she doesn't have her experience to the bones or nerves or anything else. She just said, okay, put the ice on it. And you come out of the ice cold, 40 degrees, and they put on your body almost 32 degrees with ice. And after that 10 minutes, you go back to the same number that you can hurt. You just you keep doing that. If you just report them or you go to the doctor, they will get fired you. You don't have a right. And I talked to Mr. Abdi about this issue, and he told me that why you guys don't want to vote for union. I said that even myself, if I try it, I will get fired, and nobody needs to lose their job. So... And then they start giving us a card, which is a union card, and one of us signed it. And this, like Friday, we signed in Monday. They have a new papers from I don't know from the government, and they said you need to sign this paper if you don't agree union. If I say I agree, I'll get fired. So. The thing that I can save my work and everything is just to send that paper, then if I have a problem. So, I don't know. And the people, they don't, even myself, I don't know what right I have to work or, and the rest are same like me. They don't know if they have a, if they follow the rights or they follow genius or rules. So, I think they need help very well, if you guys are available to help them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Addy. Any questions for the testifiers? Any further questions for Representative Hansen? Representative Anderson.
Well, I don't know if it's so much of a question, but more of a comment. I actually worked in a meatpacking facility. It was actually a turkey processing plant, and my job was to cut the fat off of turkeys every day, and it was a very interesting process. However, I had a very positive experience. Any time that I was on the line that I had to use the restroom facility, I was allowed to do so. I had my two 15-minute breaks, and one in the morning and one in the afternoon. I was supplied with a whole handful of different equipment from a mall that I would wear on my hand so I wouldn't cut my hand, to always making sure that I had a sharp knife, because all of those things, if I didn't have them, would contribute to the slowdown of the line, and ultimately that cost the business money. And so they were very concerned about my safety. My supervisors in particular were very concerned about my safety, because before I could even step foot on the floor, I had to make sure that my earplugs were in so I wouldn't suffer any damage to my hearing. So all of these things were in place. Now, the shop that I worked at happened to be I had locker facilities available to me as well. All of these things were in place. It happened to be a non-union shop. It was a great experience. I made a lot of money. I was paid very well for the time that I was there. And even within the time that I was there, OSHA was there once on an inspection, too. So I guess what I'm looking at this legislation and everything that's been presented to us, I don't see it as a matter of that we need additional language, but more like Representative Gunther mentioned, if there's a problem with OSHA and how they're monitoring these things, we need to look at OSHA. I think we're solving the wrong problem here. We need to look at that piece of things and make sure that we have a correction and that our OSHA regulators are doing the job that they're supposed to be doing. At my experience, they were doing their job. So, Representative Hansen, I actually would rather have you look at how can we fix those concerns, because the language that you have in the bill right now, adequate, that term itself, it's really, that's the eye of the beholder, beauty of the eye of the beholder when you're looking at that term, you know. Adequate to my husband means one thing than it does to me, as you can imagine, and as it does with anybody. So I think that we're setting ourselves up to failure, and I think that this is the wrong approach to addressing the concerns that have been brought here today. They are very serious concerns. I would encourage the employees that are here today that they make sure that they contact their OSHA representative or their stewards who are responsible for making sure that they contact the appropriate government officials and address these concerns. So that's my two cents, I guess, on the piece of legislation before us today.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Hansen, response and closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would just, in response, follow up with what I'd mentioned before. In fiscal year 2005, there were only 49 Minnesota workplace safety and health inspectors for the entire state. At current staffing and inspection levels, it would take Minnesota OSHA 59 years to inspect each workplace, and I'm not talking just meatpacking industry, each workplace under its jurisdiction just once. I think that the bill, we've made some corrections in the bill with the author's amendments that help some of the concerns there. I do think that this is an important issue. You've heard compelling testimony today. I would ask for your support for the bill as amended.
All right. With that, the chair renews this motion to that House File 643 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Walker, last bill of the day, House File 219. Thank you for coming before the committee today, Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, member.
No, Representative Walker, the chair will move that House File 643 be recommended to pass. Whoops, 219, my error. House File 219 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. In lieu of time, I'm going to give most of my time to the testifier that I've brought here, and then I'll jump in with some comments probably at the end, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, and good morning to you. Chairman Dabney and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 219. My name is Karen Eileen. I'm a member of AARP Grassroots Education and Advocacy Team. A growing number of older Americans and adults with disabilities across our state are receiving care informally by family members. In fact, unpaid family members provide 80 to 90% of the long-term care provided in society. These family caregivers are often juggling multiple roles at home and in the labor force. To better recognize the needs of family caregivers, AARP supports House File 219 legislation to allow family members to use earned sick time to care for their loved ones. A number of years ago, my mother had cancer, and I cared for her. As a nurse, I became her primary caregiver. Mom's care conflicted with my job responsibilities. I left that job. An estimated 9% of caregivers quit their jobs to provide care. Working caregivers perform nearly the impossible balancing act. Caregivers sometimes feel guilty about neglecting both sides of their lives as they are exhausting themselves trying to keep up. Early on, I missed work or needed to take personal phone calls during working hours. Other family working caregivers do. I turned down opportunities for training, special assignments, and travel, and missed out on promotions. other family caregivers do as well. Between one-third and nearly two-thirds of caregivers are employed outside of the home. Many families are involved in caregiving. In fact, the AARP estimates that nearly one in four households are involved in caring for a relative or a friend age 50 and older. By 2030, when the baby boomers reach age 65, one in five Americans will be at least 65, for a total of about 70 million older people, more than twice the number in 1996. In the 21st century, the demands placed on family and other informal caregivers are likely to escalate, affecting nearly every American family. A recent study by the National Alliance for Caregivers estimates that family caregivers suffer a financial loss over their lifetime equal to more than $650,000 lost in wages, pensions, and Social Security benefits. The study's findings also suggest that two-thirds of people providing care for elderly relatives make significant work sacrifice. What may not be factored into these figures are the increased health care resources required to treat that caregiver for symptoms of exhaustion, stress, and declining health as a result from the demands of the caregiving job, a job that is essentially unpaid in dollars and often goes unrecognized by society. Caregiving costs our business community as well. According to a 1997 MetLife study, approximately $29 billion is lost to business each year in this country from loss of productivity. When my mother needed best care and my help, there wasn't another consideration. There would always be another job, but I only had one mother. Additionally, as a nurse, I know that I gave my best care to my patients. That same best care needs to be available to our loved ones as well. I urge you to pass this legislation to better recognize the significant sacrifice made by family caregivers all over our state. And on a personal note, if this bill would encourage our family, our children, our brothers and sisters to care for us, my opinion, we should be so lucky. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Eileen. And I should point out that included in the audience today with another member of the Grassroots Education and Advocacy Team is former Representative Jim Adams. Welcome to the committee, sir. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would like to say that as a baby boomer, I know that in about 20 to 25 years, I am truly hoping that my children will be there to care for me as I age. I am in a situation where I have an aging mother also. She lives in another state. And there have been many times where she has had health emergencies, and I have been required by work to drive to Missouri to help care for her. I've also had a spouse who had open heart surgery, and I have had to be available for that as well. This legislation, I think, is a no-brainer. We live in a day and an age of aging demographics, and those of us who had small children, that feels like quite a while ago. I'm very fortunate that with my teaching contract that has been negotiated, this kind of language has been negotiated for us as a bargaining unit, and I truly do feel it is something that is not abused, but it truly does relieve the stress and the anxiety that so many workers feel when they have this opportunity to care for their family and their loved ones. Thank you for bringing it to the committee.
Thank you, Representative Swales. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hornstein.
If this is the appropriate time, I do have an amendment that I'd like to offer to the bill.
Is it in our packets, or does it need to be distributed by the page?
I believe it's in the packet.
In the packet?
The A07-0106 amendment.
All right. Representative Hornstein moves the 0106 amendment. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This simply adds domestic partners to the spouse, sibling, parent, grandparent, and step-parent. And the amendment also defines the domestic partner. So, again, we have this situation that already exists and many domestic partners caring for each other in these difficult circumstances and facing the same kind of challenges that Ms. Eileen had very well said for on behalf of the AARP. This exists in many households around the state, so we just wanted to include them in the legislation.
Representative Walker, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, when I got the bill, it's not that I purposely left out domestic partnerships, not knowing what the political will of this legislative body would be this year, wanting to make sure that we had made movement and strides moving forward. I have many constituents that would benefit from this amendment. I have many more constituents that support this amendment. I am supportive of the amendment. However, I am leaving this one up to the will of the committee.
Any discussion of the amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson.
I guess the only thing I see wrong with this is it excludes, doesn't take in domestic partners of opposite sex. And some of the stuff that I've heard and read about that, it does, there are people that are living together and living as domestic partners and that are not, it's not just of same-sex couples. There are as many of opposite sex that just chose not to get married and are living together.
Representative Nelson, do you wish to offer an amendment or do you wish to work with the author of the bill if this amendment is accepted and it moves the bill moves forward?
I think we'll work with it as we move forward, but I'm just pointing that out as a...
Representative Hornstein.
I would think that's a friendly and appropriate amendment to the amendment. I guess we could just simply say on line 1.5, with an adult of the same or opposite sex, I imagine that would accomplish what you would like.
Mr. Chair, could you just strike of the same sex?
Whose voice am I hearing? I'm sorry. Representative Lane.
Maybe we could just strike of the same sex.
Ms. Newman, could you speak to counsel's preference?
Mr. Chair and members, either is sufficient. Striking of the same sex accomplishes it without putting additional words in statutory language.
Representative Hornstein?
Okay, sure.
Your preference? Yeah. So, if I understand, the Hornstein motion is on line 1.5, after adult strike of the same sex?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
All right, Representative Hornstein makes that motion. Any discussion to... Well, it's your own. You can just do that. It's your own amendment.
Move that.
I think you can just incorporate it. It's your amendment, Representative Hornstein.
Sure.
Any further discussion to the Hornstein amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Walker, to the bill, as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am hopeful that you consider passing House Bill 219, as the testifier eloquently said. So many of our families are struggling to provide care as caregivers for their family members in different capacities. As a 35-year-old who has a mother that just turned 75 that up until now has helped been quite well, it's one of those things that you think about on a regular basis if there's going to be a call at home. And I want the citizens of Minnesota to be able to have the same benefits that I have, because if I get a call from my sister today, this moment, or on Monday while we're in session, I'm walking away and letting the speaker know that while we're in session, I'm gone. And there's no call in for me. There's no worry about what's going on, even though I will be worrying depending on what legislation is being discussed when I leave. However, I still have the opportunity to go tend to my mother at any moment when she's having difficulties. And so, like I said, I would like the same benefit for the citizens of Minnesota.
With that, members, Chair renews his motion that House File 219 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Before everybody runs off, somewhere in your pile are minutes from our February 16th meeting. Representative Swales, would you be willing to move those minutes?
I'd be happy to.
Thank you, Representative Swales. All those in favor of approving the minutes from the February 16th meeting, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. With that, we stand adjourned. Thank you, members.